When Danielle was in grade 10, she had a high school sweetheart, and she wrote about him in her diary.
October 30th, 99. John and I are going out. I think I'm falling in love with him. I asked him if he missed me, and he said, I missed you so much. And I said, I missed you too. And he said, I missed you more. And I said, I missed you more. And he said, no, I missed you more. And I said, are you sure about that? And he said, yeah.
That's Danielle reading from her high school diary. And this is Grown-Ups Read Things They Wrote as Kids. I'm Dan Meisner, and each week on our show, we invite brave Canadians to share their childhood and teenage diaries, poetry, letters from camp, short stories, and whatever else their young minds came up with. This week, recorded in front of a live audience at Little Mountain Gallery in Vancouver, we hear stories of broken hearts, summer vacations, and ninjas traveling down BC's Sunshine Coast. Sometimes the best way to figure out who we are is to start by figuring out who we were. So think about the stuff that you wrote when you were a kid, the stuff you might have tucked away in a box in the closet, and stick around. Back to Danielle and her boyfriend, John. Just a quick heads up, Danielle is reading from her high school diary, and it does contain some high school diary language. Here's Danielle again.
February 22nd. Oh my God, John broke up with me. He did it at lunchtime. He said it had nothing to do with me, but the love just wasn't there anymore. He also said he was really sorry. I love him so much. I just went into the bathroom and cried with Sarah and Jessica. They said he left because he was crying too. March 2000. John can f***ing screw himself. I'm going out with David now. He has liked me for a long time, and he asked me out yesterday at my house. June 28th, David is smothering me. The thing is, I'm independent, and he totally is not. July 2000, since David has really been pissing me off, I've developed a point system. For a 12-day period, I will give David points out of 5. The higher the better, the lower the more he pissed me off that day. In a 12-day period, the most points David could earn are 60, the least 12. If he gets 30 or below, I'm breaking up with him. I think I will adopt this as a traditional boyfriend dumping debatable system. I'll call it the bug test. Stands for boyfriend you're unsure of going. Also, if he's bugging you, it's a bug test, so it matches.
So how did David do on Danielle's bug test? Well, I asked her afterwards, and she told me that despite what she wrote in her diary, she did not actually adopt the test as a standard measure for boyfriends. She just dumped David about a month later because he was getting on her nerves. But even if Danielle never put it into practice, you have to give her some credit for developing such a comprehensive boyfriend audit system. I mean, it is ingenious, it is calculating, and I say this speaking as a former teenage boy who desperately wanted to understand teenage girls, it is terrifying. But that's the thing about young love. A lot of it is terrifying. It's raw, it's new, you don't know the rules, and you don't always know what you're supposed to do with all these new feelings you have. You know, feelings of longing and love, and in some cases, heartbreak. For some of us, writing can be a way to work through those feelings. It certainly was for Sean. When Sean's high school sweetheart broke up with him, he turned to poetry.
I use the word poetry very loosely. It's called Ode to Tear. Why do we cry? Why? I wonder if a tear knows what's going to happen to it. Does it know it will splash into nothing? Or worse, be absorbed into a wad of tissue? He thinks it's cute. Then in parentheses, God, that is. You can never stay mad at someone crying. There's just something about it. With every tear that falls, a piece of your anger, your thoughts, your reason go with it. Ah! So that's what a tear is. A tear is the human manifestation of Jesus. A tear is a martyr. It sacrifices itself so that you can sow yourself, so that all the anger and hatred is gone and there is only mourning. I say, ode to tears. Without you, where would we be? We need you, little drop of saviors. So all I can say is thank you and let you know that you are greater than all of us. You were made for more. Thank you.
John, ladies and gentlemen.
When Jenny was 13, she emigrated to Israel with her family. At the time, she spoke no Hebrew, but a boy named Yoram, who sat across from Jenny at school, he used to write little notes in the margins of her English-Hebrew dictionary. Now, those little notes, as you may have guessed, sparked a romance. But it wasn't just any romance. It was that special kind of naive, awkward, totally confusing teenage romance.
So I'm going to read a little diary excerpt. This was my diary. I called my diary Connie, which was short for confider. 7th of March, 1965. Dear Connie, what is life? Sometimes I feel terribly happy, the next time terribly sad. Yoram, that's the guy I was seeing, did not come over to my house on Friday. But do you see, I got a note from him today, which I've just put in you. Yes, he came over yesterday, and I've never felt so funny in my life. We were in my room, dancing close to Elvis's Can't Help Falling in Love. Then he pushes me onto the bed and lies on me. I thought I was going to have a baby. Because he lay on me. I am romantic, but I can't imagine us doing this. Will he kiss me? That's what I want to know. Or is he too young for this? Do I love him? Well, half yes, half no. I had a few glances through my sister Gay's book, The Carpetbaggers. Golly, it's a sexy book. Though I am old enough to understand. I'm not very developed, though, and I wish I had more of a bust. And I wish I had some hair under my arms. It makes me feel important and grown up. Well, nothing else. Oh, about having a baby? I've been to see Daphne, my friendly neighbor. She said you can't have one without periods. I was so thankful. My mother was very old-fashioned and didn't believe in talking about the birds and the bees, and so I had no idea what sex really was at that age.
If you could go back and talk to your 13-year-old self?
I would say don't be so forward. Don't be so willing to just go with any guy who writes a note to you. Enjoy the dance, but put some limits on it.
This is Grown-Ups Read Things They Wrote as Kids. I'm Dan Meisner, and I would love to hear the stuff that you wrote when you were a kid. We have upcoming live shows in Winnipeg, Ottawa, and Montreal, and we are on the lookout for readers. If you want to find out more about how you can read, visit our website. You can sign up, buy tickets to the show, and join our email newsletter. That's all at grownupsreadthingstheywroteaskids.com. That's grownupsreadthingstheywroteaskids.com. I've been hosting live Grown-Ups Read Things They Wrote as Kids events for years now, And one of the things I love most about watching readers get on stage is the way that they travel through time, how they reconnect with the person they used to be. Sometimes it's just a moment. It's a quick laugh, a nervous giggle, and you can almost see a younger version of the reader peeking out from inside of them. That's part of the power of this kind of writing. It lets you look at the world through your own eyes, but a younger set of eyes. Here's Bonnie.
Hi. So I'm a little bit nervous because it was a really difficult time. I was 15 years old. I was in grade 11, and I had to write a poem for my writing class. And so I was under pressure to write something, and I wanted it to be meaningful and important, but I didn't know what to write. And a week before I had to put this in, my mom went into the hospital. She had cancer, and she was in the ICU for a week. And every morning I read to her before I went to school from 4 until 8 a.m. because there was a nurse's strike. And so I wrote this during that time. This is that poem. It's called Mom. Charming prince will come rescue me. Comes to me in fairy tale form, promising me that everything will be all right, dear. Always something to look forward to, unrealistically. And then that star dies, and helplessness forces me to let go with my greedy baby fingers. Mine, mine, all mine! Wishing for a lullaby to sing me to sleep, getting only the monotonous whine of the cardiac monitor. That's it.
Talk to me about why you decided to bring that particular piece.
It resonates still to this day, even though it's been a really long time. It brings me back instantly to the hospital room and just, where I was then. I'm a different person now.
If you could go back and talk to 15-year-old you, what would you say to 15-year-old Bonnie?
I was really confused. It was my mom and I had a really challenging relationship, and I didn't understand how to feel. You know, there was a part of me at the time that was conflicted, confused. You know, there's a part of me that felt relief when she passed. And how do you deal with that guilt? And now I would just say it's okay. If anything, you know, it was a relief for her as well. But how would 15-year-old me know that, right? I'd probably give myself a big hug and just say, it's all right, this is just step one.
Can you talk a little bit about what writing can do, you know, the role of writing in processing and dealing with something so significant in your life?
Writing saved my life. It's that simple. I didn't do drugs, I didn't drink, I didn't do anything. I wrote, and I wrote my heart out, and that's what kept me alive. I just put my heart on that paper, and that was cathartic, and I still do, and I will continue to, and when I stop writing, I'll be dead.
I'm Dan Meisner, and this is Grown-Ups Read Things They Wrote as Kids. Each week on the show, we invite brave Canadians to get up in front of a room full of strangers and read their childhood and teenage writing. Now tell me, did you ever get that assignment on the first day of school where your teacher made you write about what you did over the summer?
Fatima's going to read that about her family's trip to Somalia. Welcome to the stage, Fatima.
What I did on my summer vacation. I traveled to Africa this summer with my mom and my sister. I went on an airplane for the first time. It was super cool, and they gave me tasty snacks. My family got us from the Nairobi airport in Kenya. There was a lot of them, and I didn't know any of them. My aunt and uncle were really nice, and my cousins too. They always had lots of candy, and I loved it. After Nairobi, we went on another plane to Somalia. This plane was smaller and not as cool. They didn't give us any snacks. My mom was born in Somalia. We went to her hometown, Galkayo. There are a lot of guns there, but they looked smaller on TV. In Galkayo, there was a lot of goats. My little sister got chased by a goat. She's okay, but it was hilarious. I met my grandmother for the first time. She's my dad's mom. I tried to take a picture with her, but she was afraid of the camera. It was weird because cameras are not scary. But she was a cool lady anyways. My summer vacation was really cool, but I'm happy I'm home because Africa doesn't have Donkey Kong Country 2. Thank you very much, guys.
Most of what people bring to grown-ups read things they wrote as kids can be divided into two main categories: fiction and nonfiction. On the nonfiction side, we hear a lot of journals, diary entries, things that are based on the real lives of the people who wrote them. We also get fiction. Weird and wonderful fiction. Unbelievably creative short stories and screenplays, for instance. But sometimes that line between fact and fiction gets a little blurry. Here's Chris reading about what it might be like if he and his friends were ninjas.
Yeah, so I grew up on the Sunshine Coast in a small town, so to supplement running through the bush for fun, we would go to Vancouver to goof around. This is how it could have gone. Jesse, Jordy, and I were dressed up as red ninjas, and we were going down to Vancouver. We caught a bus from the Petro-Can station and started down to town. When we got on the bus, we started talking. Then we arrived in Vancouver and got off the bus. We walked around town. Then we ran into some tough punks wanted for murder and vandalism. We were scared a little, but not very much. Then we said to each other, "Attack!" We jumped at the men and punched, kicked, drop-kicked, kneed, elbowed, head-butted, etc. them. We lifted them up after, we pounded on them, and took them to the police. We received a reward each, and also $200 each. We bought ninja stuff with the money, and then we bought a bus ticket for home. Everyone said that we were lying when we told our story, until they saw our medals, and also saw us on the news. The years passed. We all became senseis and retired at a very old age. We were quite wealthy. We spent our money wisely on candy, firecrackers, comics, and video games. We all died at the same time playing Sega. But our souls stayed behind. Thank you.
Chris, ladies and gentlemen.
Something that runs through a lot of this writing is the desire to be cool. I certainly remember that feeling. I remember wanting so badly to be cool. But cool is elusive, and there's a huge gap between being able to recognize what's cool and actually being cool. Our next reader, though, had a pretty good strategy. Fake it till you make it. Here's Emmett.
I'm taking you to the year of 1995. Armstrong, BC, it's Friday night, aka Youth Night at the Golden Horseshoe Cafe, and a 14-year-old Emmett Hall has the audacity to step up and read this amongst his peers. I am dressed in a Guatemalan hoodie with thrift store corduroy pants, braces, hair down to my shoulders, and I may have been stoned as I did this. Bear with me here. This first one, I'll call it a poem. I'll let you decide. It's called Hatchet Man. He turns the radio off. He grabs his hat and heads towards the building. I want you to off the future, my man, says the crime lord. He gives a simple nod and walks away. He pulls out his pistol. Pretty good so far. He loads it with the bullets of conclusion. He goes to his favorite bar, the Immaculate Inn. He has a nice apartment. Just a little aside. He opens his door and sits on his sofa. He is pure history. He pulls out his revolver. He kills the past. Future roams free.
Sometimes that desire to be cool and fit in with the crowd can lead to some pretty strange situations. Like the time that Carrie found herself in her dad's basement with her brother and his friends summoning evil entities.
Hi, Books. God, have I a lot to tell you. I went to Dad's house on Friday, and in the evening, around 9, my brother invited about 6 friends over. His friends, him, and I got really into the Ouija board and channeling. The Ouija board is a board that has a piece with a formed point, and the board itself has yes, no, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, and Z. When you and someone else lightly place your fingers on the separate piece and it will move on its own, then you orally ask it questions and it will answer by pointing the point on the letter or yes or no or a number. That was cool. Now, about channeling. If anyone else besides me is reading this, please don't try this alone. What you do is you turn off all the lights and get everyone to concentrate on darkness or blackness. Then, with your eyes closed, you imagine yourself opening this door and flying through a long tunnel. Then you get to another door and you make it open by itself. Then there will be a light and you will be seeing a being. You grab him or her and bring it through the passage. And if it works, you will be blacked out and the entity will take over. The entity seems alive and awake and it will answer questions, but you have to tie the channeler in the chair because sometimes the entity will be angry and try to attack someone through the channeler's body and someone can get really hurt. Anyway, Mark was channeling and he got a really cool entity and it joked around, but it wanted to get out of the chair. So my brother, who was asking the questions directly in front of him, like 5 feet, told him to stay in his chair. You must be polite with the entity, underlined, or else it will get furious. Anyway, me, Sherry, Nikita, and Chris, we're all sitting on the bed, totally freaked out. We were so busy watching Mark that we didn't notice that Chris was getting possessed when all of a sudden he started to writhe and attack Nikita, his girlfriend. So we all yelled, "Get out of his body!" That's how you rid the body of possession. Chris and Mark both snapped back and asked, "What happened?" We told them and gave Chris a Bible to hold onto for protection against the entities. Mark started to channel and all was fine until all of a sudden the Bible jumped out of his hand and became instantly possessed. He went crazy and Sherry screamed, "Get out of his body!" And Chris came back and threw up. And guess what? Mark's twin brother, who died at birth, told Mark through the Ouija board that he must die. And then that night, something tried to strangle him in his sleep. Freaky, huh? Freaked. Carrie, P.S. Sports day tomorrow. Hot dogs, $1. Bye!
Carrie, ladies and gentlemen.
What I'm amazed at is that I believed everything, from the demonic possession to the messages from the Ouija board to all of that stuff, to the ghost in the corner, all of it. And there was so much earnestness, like including the entire alphabet. And I remember everything being so visceral that night, that literally that people were possessed that night in my dad's basement with the shag carpet. I do believe it. And now I look back and go, well, it can't have been. It absolutely can't have been. They can't have been possessed. But maybe they were.
That is Grown-Ups Read Things They Wrote as Kids for this week. Our show was recorded live at Little Mountain Gallery in Vancouver and produced by Allison Broverman and me, Dan Meisner. Thanks this week to recording engineer Gary Morgan, and thanks to Sarah Bino, who runs a great reading series in Vancouver called Teen Angst. Check it out. Our music is by Lullatone. You can listen to episodes of Grown-Ups Read Things They Wrote as Kids and subscribe to our podcast at cbc.ca/grownups. And if you want to find out about our upcoming live shows in Winnipeg, Ottawa, and Montreal, if you want to buy tickets or sign up for our email newsletter, visit our website, grownupsreadthingstheywroteaskids.com. You know, here at Grown-Ups Read Things They Wrote as Kids, we are always on the lookout for a new slogan. We're looking for a catchphrase that explains exactly who we are and what we're all about. And I am pleased to announce that this week, I think we may have found one. Let's try this out. Grown-Ups Read Things They Wrote as Kids.
We spent our money wisely on candy, firecrackers, comics, and video games.
I'm Dan Meisner. Thanks for listening.